Welcome to the Tech Vittori podcast, where we will explore the hottest topics in connectivity and digitalization with some of the industry's leading minds.
In an age where power no longer lies in kingdoms, but in code, armies do not march. They fly. Their wings are metal, their eyes are digital, their hearts beat in unison. From the frozen frontiers of cybersecurity to the burning skies of electronic warfare, nations rise and networks fall, and dominance belongs to those who command the air. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Game of Drones, starring the moderator, lead cybersecurity expert at CertLV, Bernhard Blombergs. The network navigator, project director at Demeter, Gorazd Mirkovsky. The vanguard of defense, the CEO of the Association for Military Technology, Drones and Robotics, Artis Pabriks. And the architect of the skies, the CEO of Frankenberg Technologies, Kusi Salm.
Take it away.
Welcome, everyone. So with a distinguished panel, we're going to dive together into the game of drones. You've heard about the drone technologies already. It's prevalent. It's on the news. It's everywhere. It's part of our daily lives. It's not only the drones that allow us to deliver services. It's not only drones fighting on the front lines or saving lives. Latvia being also on the forefront of drone collision most likely is something that you've heard about. And it's not only about expanding the gray area of the front lines of the warfare, but it's also expanding the civilian capabilities where we can use the drone technology. So in this panel, the overall question that we're going to address from different perspectives is how current drone technologies and its development helps serve and defend society. The three underlying directions we're going to tackle is the integration and the readiness of the drone technology for our societies and defense, the defense of the human lives and also defense of the drone technology itself, and also offense, so drone warfare, drone versus drone, defending against adversarial drones. So with this, today I already have a panel that was introduced. I'm not going to reintroduce them again. But I will start with the house rules. So the panel will run as follows. We'll have an opening remarks from each of the panelists. I will introduce and give the word to each one of those. It will be around 3 to 5 minutes, after which we will go into a more in-depth discussion with questions to a particular panelist, and others will be able to chime in and provide their own opinion. The questions were already introduced that you can submit the questions over the QR code there, which leads you to a website. We will take those at the end of the panel. However, as we are going to go into the discussion and I will moderate the session, if you have a particular question, I will look at the audience. If you raise your hand, you will be given a chance to address the panel as we are going through the discussion as well. Now, with this further ado, I would like to open up the opening statements on how the current drone technology helps serve and protect society from integration, defense, and offense perspectives. And I'll start off with Dr. Artis Pabriks.
Thank you very much. I came here and I thought what would be the proper way to initiate this discussion, because to be the first one, it is always an honor, but it's also a high responsibility. And I would like to bring down a little bit this very high-ranking tone of this panel about the game of drones, because it's, of course, you know what, and it's very soundy, you know what it means, game of thrones, game of drones. But, and this is probably how younger generation frequently sees the life, but the game is actually not a game, it's a real life. And the drones are entering our space and our daily life together with new technologies, with robotics, with artificial intelligence, with every day more and more. Unfortunately, this progress is happening in a parallel and because of, or despite of, the war going on in Ukraine. We know that the big invasion of Russia started in Ukraine in February 2022. I was at that time a defense minister, and I could not imagine in that February that the war and technologies will develop in such a way in the next 3 years. Because in those days, there were few drones only flying, there were some reconnaissance, and now you basically speak about areas of no-go zone at the front line in military up to maybe 40 kilometers. So this is dramatic change. And I would say that that brings us to question different things. First of all, we, just like with a sailing boat, we must keep up with progress which is happening immensely fast. If we do not keep up with that progress, if we don't hold that steering wheel of that boat of life very strong and convincingly, then we are out of game. We are out of the drone game. And actually, many countries at this moment are out of the game of drones because they did not take the challenges seriously. They were dealing with the secondary issues in their decision-making on a political level, on a technological level, sometimes even in the armies. Because we can see that, for instance, when there are some drones flying into Poland, 10,000 price of a drone missile which is hitting it down is 500,000. Unsustainable. So that's just one thing about military part. A civilian part, you see, drones and technologies, this is what we would like to engage with because we see this as a great opportunity to make our lives easier because technologies help us, machines help us, robotics help us, makes our life easier. But at the same time, it's not a game, it's also a responsibility. And I will not mention all the areas where we can use all these technologies because it is happening all the time. Instead of taxis, autonomous vehicles, helping doctors, artificial intelligence, detecting diseases, finding security for the borders, etc. But there is one side effect which probably is not an issue for this panel, but just remember that for the next meeting, maybe in a year. This is your private lives and your private being as a human. Do you want to control the boat? Do you want to control the drones? Do you want to control artificial intelligence? Or vice versa, you want that they are controlling you? Because all the technical progress will be always also used by those who do have a power. That's very clear. And this is where we have to be also very careful. So yes, we have to engage with technologies. We have to be on the top of the wave as a servers, and this is where Latvia is actually, because I think in Europe we are one of the countries which at this moment are surfing really on this wave, because we started faster, we saw the challenge. But if you fall, it will be extremely painful, so be careful.
All right, thank you. I'll shift over to Gorazd as well on your opening statement on how drone technology helps a society.
Perfect, thank you very much. I would first like to start with, again, thank you very much for the kind introduction. Personally, it's my first time attending the TechRetor event, and it's I'm impressed from the level of organization, the level of which the discussions are being held, people representing different types of industries communicating with each other. It's truly remarkable. So, during these past days, I've went to several of these panel discussions and closed sessions, and most of them touched base with connectivity. Having the game of drones in mind today, I expect the same thing to happen because we will be discussing not just how to integrate drones safely within the airspace and make them fly. We will also discuss on how to keep them safe in the airspace. And you will see the connectivity plays a crucial role for keeping the drones safe. From that perspective, just a short introduction from my side. So I'm a radio frequency engineer, so that was my previous role, and I come from the mobile network operators industry. Currently, I'm the project director at Demeter, a company that bridges the aviation world with the telecommunication world. So why I've mentioned first the radio frequency part, I'm sure most of you and some of the panelists, of course, have either seen the movie Imitation Game or heard about the engineering and mathematician Alan Turing. So basically, this is a story, and spoiler alert, during the World War II, the Second World War, there was a turning point when, by processing radio frequency signals, messages sent via the radio frequency signals, there was a decisive strategic advancement for the alliance created by these processing methods. So today, nowadays, in a very different way, but again similar, we are processing at our company Demeter the raw 4G and 5G network data. And based on this data, we are creating airspace intelligence. So this intelligence helps us keep the drones safe from jamming, spoofing, hacking, hostile overtake, and even shooting down the drones. So by processing, sorry for that, just to give you the four pillars of the technology and the information that we are delivering today. So first of all would be the airspace connectivity awareness. It is out of highest importance, the network operators, for commercial purposes, to know where in the airspace they have sufficient enough connectivity for, as mentioned, control purpose. If the connectivity is lost for beyond visual line of sight drone operations, that is actually when accidents are occurring. Just a couple of months ago, there was a news in a German newspaper how a drone lost connectivity and landed on top of the overhead power lines, causing a huge fire damage. The next point is dynamic people density data. By having this type of information coming from the mobile network operators, we are enabling the operators, the drone operators, to have a dynamic risk assessment and avoid unexpected gathering or densely populated area for flying their drones. The third caterpillar for intelligence is the GNSS jamming and spoofing monitoring. By processing this type of data, we are treating the mobile network operator infrastructure as a nervous system for the entire country. And this nervous system reacts automatically when there is a jamming or spoofing attack. And we are providing this type of alerts towards operator, the aviation systems, and the military system so that they can act upon and destroy that cause. The fourth one, which is currently under development, is a use case that was also happened not so distant past in Poland, where drones were controlled with the mobile network operator infrastructure in Poland. So by processing this type of data and the signaling between the user equipment and the network operator data, we can detect raw drones in the network. So basically the results are connected and controlled drone, dynamic risk assessment for the people density data, navigation alerts if there is an issue, and monitoring and jamming and spoofing attacks, and raw drone detection, detecting the cause early so that the drones cannot cause any damage.
All right, we will go more questions as well afterwards on specifically the points that you mentioned as well here for the protection of the infrastructure as well. Kusti, the opening remarks from your side.
Yeah, my name is Kusti Zeilma. I'm the CEO of Frankenburg Technologies. That is the only and first defense tech company working in all three Baltic states. So Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania. And we're building missiles, affordable missiles. We're bringing the affordability into the crown jewel of the missile industry, or the defense industry, that is missiles. And there is true rocket science made in Latvia. So I just want you all to be aware of that. So we think a lot about drones in our company, a lot. And usually the most complex questions are the most simple questions. And the simplest question, I think, is that, and hardest at the same time. So why we talk about drones? Why are the total manufacturing of warhead-mounted drones globally 10 million this year, whereas it was maybe in low thousands 3 years ago. Why are there 300 drone companies in Ukraine only? Why are there a national champion, at least 10 other companies manufacturing drones in every European country? Why are we having these conferences and, you know, speaking about that the drones are going to be the future? And it's actually a very complex question. You remember if you were in the 9th or 8th grade, then there was these equations where there was x's and sets and brackets and everything. And then you needed to deduct this, so eventually had like x equals 3. The way we approach it in Frankenburg is that this x equals 3 in drones is because no one knows how to take them down. You know, this is why we make them. They deliver the surveillance cheaper than you could do it with manned aircraft or with the human eyes. And they can fetch the explosives to quite a long distance that is, often more handy than with artillery or other stuff. But the primary reason why Russians are doing this because they know that they impose the harm two different ways. First, of course, is the military destruction when they shoot it at the critical national infrastructure, the military targets, and all this. And second one, and even more important one, after the end of 22, when the sort of the official attrition warfare started in Ukraine, is the economic harm, because they know that every single time they launch a drone that costs them 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, it doesn't matter. We spend 2, 3, 4, often 10, 100 times more money to take them down. So it's also economic harm. And economic harm in attrition warfare means squeezing the life and hope away from the war fighting. And once you do it successfully, this is how you win. And this is exactly they're going to go after us. Because the economic harm will be something that will make us bankrupt much faster than we ran out of the physical, you know, defense readiness. And now I come back to Frankenburg, the idea that we put forward. So eventually there are going to be libraries full of books written about the Ukrainian war and, you know, how the drones came, and there are going to be some hero stories and all this. Well, very similar like this radar signal thing that was allegedly something that won the Second World War. But the truth is very simple. The only way to get away with a drone threat is coming up with something cheaper than the drones are to take them down. And we work to come up with missiles, because missiles are 3-4 times faster than drones. They're more precise. They're autonomous to operate. They don't need operators. They don't need to change batteries in every 2 days. You can distribute them around the critical national infrastructure, the critical inroads, and you can scale. The only problem with missiles currently is that it's really like a designer bag industry. So it's very exquisite, very, very, very good, very technically advanced, but at the same time hugely expensive, and they manufacture them very, very little, so it's only available for a selected. So we're going to change all that. So we're going to bring mass manufacturing affordability into this sort of ring-fenced, exquisite category of warfare, and we do it here in Latvia. And I think this will be the long-term solution how to tackle the problem.
Right. Thank you. Let's go to the more focused questions. I'll start with Dr. Artis Pabriks. So from the perspective of the daily society operations and integration of drones and civil protection, as well as from the defense perspective, like military capabilities of defending civil society, what is the future development and current development, both in the, are we there in the political sense? Are we there from the strategic perspective? Are we having enough support for the technology to be developed? Where is we currently going, and where are we headed to?
Well, do you want me to speak about half full or half empty glass? I am more tended to speak about half empty, because if there are good things, you know, in our northern European region, okay, good things, they happen, we don't mention them. What about kind of challenging stuff? Well, first of all, I would say we are not ready. Why are we not ready? Because if we speak, and I have to speak from the perspective of defense, for instance, and security, people normally, and it's normal in our psychology, to challenge or to respond to the challenges only when they are happening to you. Until the bomb is falling on the neighbor's house or neighboring country, it's not your house, it's not your country, so okay, it's maybe it will pass me. And the perception of threat, for instance, in Europe and globally, is very different in Finland, Baltic states, Poland on the one hand, and then in countries which are further to the west. So I wouldn't say that the problem is engineering. Okay, these problems are solvable. I don't think that the problem is money. There's a lot of money. European countries have 17% of global economy, while Russia, which is challenging everybody, and just doing it every day, they have only 2.5%. So we have money. We're just not using this money in the right direction. We use it for the secondary and third issues, not for that basic ones which we are challenged of. And we all speak, for instance, about drones and missiles. Let's put just one challenge. Okay, even if we would produce those drones and technologies how to counter them down, who will pilot them? Do we teach in schools drone piloting? Even in our country, here in Latvia, you know, it's we have on the one hand defense courses and in schools already for a number of years, but drone piloting, only few know. So I think we have to start with changing mindset, with teaching people, understanding what there are, because actually drone piloting is not, for instance, only for military purpose. You can use everywhere where you started the question with, and these people will need these skills. These are the skills what we need yesterday, not today. And we are lagging behind, and then what is happening in other our European countries, it's even more half full glass, just one third than it is here. So there are a lot of challenges which is in our heads, which we cannot solve. We don't want to solve them because we think it will pass, and also then practical implementations, unfortunately.
Right, thank you. I mean, you took away a question that I had about the human operator perspective. You answered it really well. To engage the other panelists in the similar discussion is here. Do you think as the technology is reliable, the drone technology is reliable, or the ones that we rely on top of executing drone operations, is it mature enough? Is it reliable, both technology and human perspective? Let's start with Gorazd.
Yes, so the way I see it from my point of view and experience is that the cellular network is already today reliably providing connectivity for controlling of drone operations. And basically, most of the drone operations, the beyond visual line of sight drone operations that are bringing today value on the table related to overhead power line inspection, railway inspections, gas pipeline inspections, critical infrastructure inspections, they are being conducted on the cellular network, either 4G or 5G. There is always a redundancy needed. So aviation is always about safety. Therefore, there are always additional technologies used as a redundancy or fallback method. The most used technology is the satellite technology used for the fallback. And we do have now a widespread different type of SATCOM technology providers in terms of geostationary LEO systems, which are also providing not just narrowband but broadband information flow of data. So to answer your question in a short manner, yes, we do see that the technology is here and it's here to stay, but we must learn also how to protect it, because the way I see it, we are using that technology so that we can provide value for us, but also the enemy is using the same technology, our technology, to cause damage on our infrastructure. Therefore, it's imperative that we continuously develop and use this technology for good purposes, but also learn how to further defend and develop capabilities to defend these type of technologies.
Kusti, what do you think about our current maturity? And you pointed it really well that it's about also the money, right? Inflicting damage on monitor and taking down drones.
I think it's a very spot on question, because I think we're a little bit fallen in love in all this drone thing. So let me ask you one question. You're all technology enthusiasts here. So what is the technology I'm describing now? Just, you know, shout out loud if you know the answer. So how do you take 10 kilos of high explosive to 30 kilometers with 10-15 meter accuracy in 75 seconds? What is the technology I'm describing? And it's widely used. So 30 kilometers, 75 seconds, 10 kilos, 10 meter, 50 meter accuracy.
Would be some guided
artillery.
Artillery. Yeah.
Exactly. No one would describe this as innovative, right? But this is something that none of the drone-based systems can do, not even close, in terms of the payload, in terms of the time to deliver. Okay, you can do better accuracy, probably. But no one is going to sit and wait 20 minutes until you get there with your drone. So what I want to say with this is the drones is, they use drones in Ukraine because this is what they have. These are the cars they're playing with. And again, as you said, as I said earlier, they use it because there's no ways out to affordably take them down. And until we don't get a solution how to affordably and at scale take the drones down, they're going to keep on manufacturing and manufacturing and manufacturing. So this is the gist and the key of the problem, how to get rid of that.
All right. Thank you. Goraz, you mentioned in your opening remarks about, well, integration with the drone technology will beyond the line of sight with the mobile operators. And also you mentioned that, to your best knowledge, this should be a reliable technology. Now, when we would be placing ourselves in a state of war where all the infrastructure is being targeted and attacked, and we're relying on this mobile telecommunication infrastructure that potentially might go out, what is the reliability at this point, and how do you counter this? Maybe it's still reliable.
Yes, very, very, very challenging and good questions, but I was part of a panel discussion yesterday, which was named 5G, private 5G networks and dual use as well. So, and basically from the perspective of the military side, there were military persons representing their side of the story there, and also their usage of the 5G technology for conflict scenarios. So I've really remembered this comment. I don't know the name of the person who said it, but the statement was, using military RF in conflict zones is a death penalty, because it can be easily detected and targeted. Whereas if you can compare the public networks, you cannot target complete target networks, or you cannot distinguish what is civilian or what is military purpose used of that part of the network, right? So I think that there has to be an interworking capabilities between the private 5G network used for military purposes together with the civilian 5G or 4G networks. Therefore, by doing so, we will gain the most reliable technology in such use case scenarios.
So how do we, and it's a very tricky question as well, how do we ensure the safety of the drone technologies being, is there any fallback mechanisms that they will rely on in case of something, an incident happening, especially when we're talking beyond the line of sight, right? So this is something where we're trying to ensure also the safety of the human society so that the drone doesn't just fall off from the sky, right? How we are ensuring this?
Well, of course, there is always a fallback. So basically, even today, so it depends on what type of drones are we talking about. They are very small, light-weighted drones, medium-sized or large drones, which are today used to deliver 200, 300 kilos of delivery packages. So if we discuss about small and medium-sized, they are either relying strictly on one technology, or even so, this technology might be cellular, but there are always redundancy even in cellular. You have 5G, 4G, redundancy and 3G or 2G, these legacy technologies that can provide additional connectivity in such use case scenarios. But then there is this fallback solution towards the satellite network as well. So there are these hybrid modems existing today on the market, which are being put into use exactly for those purposes.
Right. And I'm also reminding that if you're here and you want to ask a question to our panelists, feel free to do so. Just raise a hand and we'll pass the microphone over to you. And I'm doing a quick sweep of the audience as well for this. All right. Unless there's any questions, we'll move on forward. I will try to engage now with Kusti, right? So the question is here, so how do we now defend against the adversarial drones? Do you see, okay, you're dealing with the missile systems. Let's pivot a bit more forward to drone-to-drone warfare, if that is something that you foresee as something. Would drones carry a payload? Would you launch a missile from the drone, or it would be only the air-to-drone or ground-to-drone? How would we engage and take down the hostile drones?
Well, we need to realize that we are not living in a sort of in a vacuum or in a sort of static world. So once we come up something innovative, then Russians will also innovate. And this is how it works. And this is how it has worked since the 22. But when it comes to drones, and again, I come back to missiles, because we're missile people, there are some physical parameters that will, let's say, categorize drones with physical limitations. So everything that is propeller-based has a speed limit of 400 kilometers an hour. And this is for a very short period of time. And very importantly, this is relative to Earth. So the elevation speed is even 10 times less than that. Which means that if you look at the manufacturing of Garand 3s right now, then 15% of those are jet engine-based. Jet engine-based means that they can go 500 kilometers an hour plus. And this is 15% now, and they're just ramping up. Probably same time next year, it's going to be like 30,000 already. And this is where the sort of the drone warfare cat and mouse game goes into play. Once the drone flies for 500 kilometers an hour in the air, and you try to intercept this with something that has a maximum speed of 400, then what do you call this strategy of actually hitting that? It's called crossing fingers, because this is the only thing that you have. Physically, it's going to be extremely expensive and difficult to do. Again, this is where the missiles come into play, because you can also make a jet engine powered interceptor drones. But problem with them is that you're never going to have the cost to kill ratio fixed with that. They're going to be inherently more expensive than the ones that just loiter in the air or fly in the air, because acquiring target that is 500 kilometers an hour will forever be more expensive. Having the acceleration, propulsion, everything to get it in a high maneuverable base in the air is forever inherently going to be more expensive. And you know, this is the reason why the missiles have been the exclusive and almost the only air defense solution after the Second World War.
Right. I mean, we touched upon, and Artis Fabrics mentioned about the civilian engagement, or actually training the operators. I'll come down to civilian engagement as well. The tooling that you propose, the rockets, obviously this is for the military defense, military use. Would you see civilians being trained in using this technology as well to assist the military? Or you would say, okay, these rockets are only for the military use, and only armed forces are allowed to use that?
Me or what?
Yes, you. Yes, yes.
Oh,
yes,
no,
yes.
No. Missile to every family. I mean, it's. I mean, there are inherent characteristics of the missile. They are fast, and you can play with a warhead. You can make it much smaller. I mean, you can make it a sort of only precision kinetic hit one where there isn't no warhead. So, and if you hit something that goes, 350 meters a second and it weighs a couple of kilos, well, it's going to hurt you a lot. So it's going to take, very big things down from Earth. And this might be one of the ways how to protect the critical national infrastructure. Because if you think of the kinetic ways of how to do that, then it's A, explosives, and B, the cannon-based solutions. Maybe don't explode in the air, but the idea is that you hit them in the air. The problem with all this cannon-based or machine gun or whatever rifle-based solutions is that, you know, whatever goes up also goes down. And where are the most of the critical national infrastructure? Well, somewhere in the urban areas. So you don't really want to, you know, 35-millimeter, you know, cannon bullets flying in the air over your houses. So I think there are some inherent characteristics that, you know, missile present that you can also use for civilian purposes.
Mm-hmm. Artis, about the question about the engaging more people in training as an operators, because that is something what we require. And if we look at the perspective of how Ukrainians are engaging their civilian society, they are training actually just regular citizens as drone operators to conduct intelligence operations, maybe even doing strikes on the military targets or legitimate military whatever installations or moving objects. Where do you see how we would we be able now already to start engaging civilians in preparing them as a drone operators, not only having this as a National Guard or military capability?
Well, first of all, we must understand that there will never be one solution, one universal medicine, one weapon with which you will solve all the issues. It's just like in real life that we have to tackle simultaneously number of challenges. We have no choice just to do ones and finish this and do the next one. It happens very seldom. That's one thing. Secondly, I would say that we have to understand what do we speak about. Do we speak about defense, security, and military, or we speak in general about the influence of new technologies on our situation as a civilization, on the people? Defense is one part, security is one part. The rest is frequently interconnected, but that's a little bit different. The third thing, once we can answer this question, is how do we, again, change our mindset? Because I would say that at this moment, frequently our education system is not really corresponding to those needs where technologies and industries are developing. So we have to figure out what we keep, because we cannot just add and add and add, because the kids simply will, the heads will blow up. They cannot take everything. You have to figure out what is secondary and what is at this moment the most important thing. Then we must also change the mindset here of decision makers, and also if we speak about military, sorry, but I sometimes have an impression that industrialists, inventors, they know more about warfare and the new possible hypothetical weapons than our military. That frequently happens. Why? Because they are not always engaged with each other. So we have to put these things together. Basically, what we have to do is we have to put together our education system, our industry, and in the defense and security, our defense forces. And they have to work as one, not just separately trying to develop something. And I think education system, this is a key. And again, the last sentence, the side effects. You see, we try to be technologically advanced, we try to surf on the wave of modernity. Artificial intelligence will play a huge role in combining all these technologies, okay? But we must understand, why do we do this? We don't do this because of technologies. We do not live for technologies. At the end, they still have to be subdued to us. And that will be a huge challenge for all of us, because easy life, for centuries we know from different books, easy life is that somebody else decides on you. And if you agree on this, then forget about democracy, forget about your rights, forget about your privacy. And this is where sometimes we are pushed with all the technological revolution. So beware of these challenges as well.
Gorost, what do you think? Are we in charge of the technology, or currently the technology is out of our hands and we're just seeing where it flows?
So
with the drone technology, let's give it from the perspective of the drone technology. Is it easy to learn to operate beyond the line of sight
no,
drones?
No, we are definitely in control of the technology. I don't see that the technology has crossed the line where we are not in control anymore. What I would also would like to state and stress is that it's out of highest importance that these different industries, as you've mentioned, the military industry, the civilian infrastructure, they really start working together, because the age where we have technology for civilian only and technology for military only are way behind us. Dual use, it's the most common used word in the industry today. What is the alternative? The alternative is, in Ukraine, they are shutting down public network, the cellular public network, because they would like to avoid attacks from enemy drones. We have to work together. We have the capability, we have the technology to detect drones, so how do you fight that what is not visible for you? How do you fight invisible enemy? Rockets and aiming at drones is always going to be very important, but it's also important to detect, to see the enemy so that you can aim and shut it down. Therefore, these both technologies, the civilian critical infrastructure and the military, they have to start working together immediately so that we can achieve even better results.
Kusti, as a final question to our panel before we open up the questions from the audience and from the online viewers, is where do you see we're heading out? What is the drone warfare or the warfare against the drones leading? Where do you see us in a near future or a longer-term future? Is the technology already there? Have we reached up the maximum?
I think the biggest question we have, especially in this region, is are we fast enough? Are we, you know, doing the utmost maximum? And of course, I know, and this, you know, people are watching this and, you know, engaged and all this, and the correct answer sort of should be yes, but we all know that it's not yes. And there was this German philosopher, like a few hundred years ago, he said something like that the biggest power is risen out of the biggest misery. So what will be the biggest unleash of the innovation and military tech? Well, someone else starts shooting at you. I mean, that's very simple. Then most of the problems we have been discussing here for 2 days, they just suddenly evaporate. We don't discuss about safety, regulations, dual use, because you want to deliver something that protects you. And this is what's happening in Ukraine. And so I think there are, you know, group of nations in Europe that are in between, that sort of can understand this sort of misery part, can relate to that. Now the question is, can we also unleash the big power out of that? Or we wait until this gets to us? And I think this is the very, very, well, it's essentially the only question that every defense tech entrepreneur needs to ask himself and everyone working in the field. And then what is the extra that you are willing to put forward? Like, what are the extra working hours you are willing to put forward every day? What are the extra euros you are willing to, you know, put away every day? These are the real questions.
So, right, to conclude the panel and open up this for the questions, just as I wanted to reiterate what the panelists, distinguished panelists, already mentioned, is it's not a game, it's reality that we're living in every day. And it's highly paced and highly dynamic, so we don't know where it's going to lead. We don't know what to predict. I mean, the battlefield conditions change, if not even by days, it changes by weeks, definitely pushing us forward to use the technology and adapt to it. Protecting the civil society while giving also the tools for the society is one of the things, not only for the military, training, preparing the operators, and giving the fighting chance as all of us, as a nation together, by using different technologies beyond the line of sight, aligning the budget and assigning the right money to the right places, using innovative technologies that are cheap and are easier to be used against taking down the drones as well. With this, where's our moderator? And I would like to ask if there's any questions from the online audience.
Yes, there are quite a few. The most popular question: how do you protect 5G LTE-enabled drones against quantum and large AI-enabled attackers? Are you considering the deployment of the ITU-T X1811 recommendations?
Okay, I will direct this question to Goraz, most likely, because you're talking about the integration of drones into
who is telcos. A smart guy?
There's a lot of buzzwords in the question, right? So Goraz, try to untangle this.
Well, it's a very challenging question, where I don't think there is a straight answer to it, basically. As I said, there are always fallback solutions. So basically, it is very important to monitor the situation, to know, to have a live situational awareness based on dynamic network data processing. Because when you have that in near live conditions, then you know what is happening in the network and how to act and to react in order to secure the drone operation, which would be the next fallback technology that the operator could use so that this type of operation ends with a success. Related to the ITU, honestly, I don't know what that is. Yeah.
Any more questions from the online viewers?
Yes, there are. Second most popular question: what is your view on the role of universities and research in developing drones and AI? How can we make the research to application path more efficient?
Dr. Artis Pabrik, most likely this is something
you... Yeah, well, I think that in my view, and I was working in academic circles also for a number of years, I would say the only way is that schools, not only universities, schools and universities, different type of colleges, they directly engage with producers. They directly engage with industries. That is the only way to work together. We must not have a situation where there is a graduate who is coming out into the market, going to company, and then he or she starts to be re-educated because the real life is different than that one in the school.
All right, and as the moderator, if we have one more, we'll just address it. Just a random question now to you, Kusti.
Sure. When will drones start swarming?
Kusti, if you can.
When? Well, I think they already are. And the question is, I think, what are we going to do when they're going to start swarming?
I think
and
they do.
The answer is missiles.
And you're right. I mean, when we look at the Ukrainian experience, the drones are swarming from both sides. And as soon as the conditions are there that do not allow the drones to fly, then the artillery kicks in, so to prevent a movement of the troops towards the other side. With this, I would like to thank you for being part of this discussion. Thank you for the distinguished panel, and I'll see you in the next place, wherever you are.